21. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, May 5, 1779. Afternoon. Treachery is underway. If Your Excellency thinks me criminal, for heaven's sake, let me be immediately tried and, if found guilty, executed, Benedict Arnold writes in a feverish script to George Washington. Arnold's financial misdeeds have finally caught up with him, and a court-martial is due to begin at the end of the month. Rather than fight the proceedings, however, Arnold wants to speed them up. He longs to silence his critics, clear his name, and get on with the new life he shares with his young bride. Arnold has another, far more devious reason for expediting the court-martial. They have had 3 months to look for evidence and cannot produce one against me, he adds. I have nothing left but the little reputation I have gained in the army. It has been 3 weeks since the widower Arnold wed Peggy Shippen in her family townhouse on 4th Street. The ceremony was simple, as befitting the hard times upon which the Shippen family has fallen during the war. Never claiming to be a gentleman, Arnold apparently boasted about his wife's performance in the marital bed the following morning. Footnote: The Marquis de Chasseloux, a French general visiting Philadelphia, would be the source of this hearsay. End footnote. Crassly as he might behave, however, Arnold's devotion to his young bride is complete. The couple honeymooned in New Jersey and Pennsylvania, spending long days traveling through the countryside by carriage and nights in the homes of friends. In those hours on the road, Benedict and Peggy unburdened themselves to each other, forging a bond of love and trust that will last a lifetime and endure countless trials. They spoke of financial stability, discussed the outcome of the war, and Peggy confided her deepest Tory sympathies to her new husband, eager for him to know where her heart truly lay. Benedict Arnold is a man constantly flirting with disaster. Money flows through his hands almost as fast as he can accrue it, and extravagance seems to be his personal mandate. Peggy's father, knowing that he could no longer care for his own daughter, stipulated in the marital contract that Arnold purchase a lavish home for her. Arnold did so, but the couple must rent out their palatial new 96-acre estate at Mount Pleasant rather than live in it because they cannot afford the upkeep. Footnote: Once a country estate, Mount Pleasant now lies within Philadelphia's Fairmount Park District. The home is open to the public for tours. End footnote. The enormous debt hanging over the marriage troubles Peggy, for she knows what it is like to grow up in a family of means only to see a fortune slip away. Yet she also admires Arnold's ingenuity and trusts he will find a solution to their financial crisis. Rather than be frustrated by her husband's ruthless ambition, Peggy finds it to be an aphrodisiac. As Benedict Arnold now writes to George Washington from his bedroom inside the former home of Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor Richard Penn, he is adamant that the date of his court-martial be advanced. Footnote: Richard Penn was the grandson of William Penn, the founder and namesake of Pennsylvania. End footnote. The dreams and aspirations that he and Peggy discussed during their honeymoon are fresh in his head. Only through triumph in the court-martial can Arnold return to the war, profiteering, and perhaps something more. In an elaborate scheme already concocted by Benedict and Peggy Arnold during their honeymoon, he will make contact with her old paramour from the British occupation, the cunning and ruthless Major John André. In a twist of fate, André was appointed Deputy Adjutant General to the British Army, which included responsibility for gathering intelligence, just 2 weeks ago. Due to a shortage of replacement troops, the British are intent on winning the war through procuring, digesting, and communicating intelligence of the motions of the enemy. They have begun making lists of American generals who may be turned to their cause. To many, the revolution appears dead, with perhaps 50,000 conservative loyalists on the verge of enlisting to support the British. But the English need a man to lead them. Unless the refugees and other loyalists are put under the command of a person in whom they confide and to whom they have an attachment, they can answer no valuable purpose, reads one British report. To his advantage, Benedict Arnold is currently famous in London as General John Burgoyne stands before Parliament blaming his loss at Saratoga on Arnold's brilliant generalship. Clearly, there is no better time than right now for Arnold to engage the British and test what his services might be worth to them. Through Major André, General Arnold hopes to share military secrets, troop strength, gun emplacements, and tactical plans. He has already met with Joseph Stansberry, a storekeeper specializing in glass and china, who is well trusted in loyalist circles. Arnold has ordered the 30-year-old Stansberry to communicate with a network of spies led by William Franklin, the former governor of New Jersey and illegitimate son of Benjamin Franklin. Footnote: William Franklin was released from jail in 1778 as part of a prisoner exchange with the Americans. Franklin's zeal for the British cause only increased during his incarceration. He set up residence in the Loyalist stronghold of New York upon his release and was soon named president of the Board of Associated Loyalists, a group dedicated to spreading terror by murdering patriots in cold blood. End footnote. Through this network, Stansberry is to pass along a letter from Arnold indicating his desire to join the British cause, for the right price. Just to make sure that Stansberry can come and go from the Arnold's Philadelphia home without being questioned, Arnold is awarding him a large sum of money to ostensibly renovate the dining room. Treason is a capital offense, but for a famous general like Arnold, jumping to the winning side in the conflict will undoubtedly spare him from the hangman's noose and allow him to enjoy a long and happy life with his beloved Peggy. In return for this betrayal, Benedict Arnold hopes to receive enough money to live comfortably for the rest of his days. The burden of debt under which he now lives will easily be forgotten, as he and Peggy can simply walk away from their creditors and begin a new life in England. Ideally, the British will be so thankful that, in addition to the money, the King may offer Arnold a knighthood, making the couple Sir Benedict and Lady Arnold. Of course, Benedict Arnold will assume almost all the risk, while Peggy will share only in the reward. On May 10, 1779, 100 miles from Philadelphia, in a house in Lower Manhattan, Joseph Stansberry meets with William Franklin about Arnold's bold offer. Franklin, in turn, introduces Stansberry to Major John André. Again, the timing is ideal. For as a man new to his job, André is seeking a triumph in order to impress his superior officer, General Henry Clinton. André immediately writes back to Benedict Arnold, outlining the codes and methods of communication that will allow them to transmit information, promising that any partial but important blow should by his means be struck or aimed upon the strength of just and pointed information and cooperation, rewards equal at least to what such service can be estimated at, will be given. Arnold is then given a code name. Monk. Footnote: the name is an allusion to George Monk, a 17th century English patriot who was instrumental in restoring the monarchy to England in 1660. End footnote. The ingenious plot to destroy American freedom has begun.